Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
What's up? Welcome to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. The New York Yankees were dead in the water for the first eight innings of their three-game series with the Detroit Tigers. And from that point forward, it kind of felt like one of those weird series where everything went right. Even when things went wrong, the Yankees were there to respond with some positives. And at the end of the day, at the end of the 3 days, we're sitting here on an off day Monday with the New York Rangers up 1-0 in their playoff series, the New York Knicks playoff series to resume tonight. No Yankees baseball. They're coming off a three-game sweep of Detroit. Were we thrilled with every second of those games? Absolutely not. Do they all count as wins? No doubt. And if you asked me at the end of the eighth inning or the top of the ninth on Friday night in that absolute suckfest, mud-eating, dog garbage offensive performance where it kind of felt like, okay, we need almost a universal reset here. None of this is working. This is as non-competitive as it gets. I thought Congress eliminated the non-compete clause, and then I met the Yankees offense on Friday night. Horrific. They don't make it out in the ninth inning. They win that game and take the reins from there, and we appreciate everybody joining us. We're going to be recapping it as well as the end of the O's series. Last time we were live, of course, they were getting absolutely bludgeoned by the Baltimore Orioles. That didn't change. That was a pretty interesting Gleyber Torres quote after that game. Plus, Aaron Judge's first career ejection this weekend. Literally, why? Thanks for joining us, though. You can find us live on YouTube every Monday, Thursday, 2 o'clock Eastern, as well on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, the like, whatever your faves are. We will be there in audio form after the show goes live on YouTube. Thomas Carinante, thank you for joining me as always. And you've got an offer, and I think it's a new offer for listeners.
I believe it is a new offer, folks. How's everybody doing? Caesar Sportsbook is here. They are looking to cover your first bet up to $1,000. Can you believe that? New customers will get a second chance bet up to $1,000 when you sign up with our promo code YGY1000. That is one and three zeros. YGY1000. That means if your first bet loses, you will get a full wager returned as a bonus bet up to that $1,000. Caesars offers daily profit boosts as well, and Caesars reward credits on every single wager, which can be redeemed for bonuses, sports tickets, and other VIP experiences. Pretty cool. Signing up with our code YGY1000 not only covers your first bet, but it also gets you access to Caesars' fantastic rewards program. If you're looking to join Caesars, go ahead and download the app, register with our promo code again, YGY1000, to make sure that first bet is covered. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. I'm trying to go fast, but I can't. I can't do it today. It's Monday. And quite frankly, the series didn't make me feel good. Call me a loser, call me a hater, call me a pessimist, but I don't know, man. You follow up that O series with that eight innings you had against the Tigers to open everything up on Friday. Uninspiring. Was I pumped about the 2 days after? 5-2 win, 5-3 win, 5-2 win. Sure, maybe, I don't know. You strike out 21 times in 2 days on Saturday and Sunday. You walk four times. Doesn't really inspire me. I don't know, man. I'm certainly appreciative of the sweep. Let's get this out of the way. Because, look, we are hard on the Yankees, and maybe we need to reset expectations because offensive numbers as a whole are down across the league. If the Yankees are among the top teams in offense and you've been watching this team all year, you would probably guess something is afoot because the Yankees' offense does not look good top to bottom. We are 5+ weeks into the season. You would think some of the guys who have yet to come around would have, you know, would have some sort of semblance of doing so, and that's kind of not the case for the most part. So I don't know. I'm a little bit disillusioned. I'm happy for the day off because you have the series against the Astros, who you know are praying and hoping that we fold like a lawn chair so they can get back on track and figure out whatever the hell is going on over there in Houston. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how you felt, but that's kind of my feeling. I am grateful for the wins. Again, banking the wins, getting all these wins under our belt, 10 games over 500 with all the problems that are occurring. But guess what? There aren't really any problems with the lineup outside of DJ LeMahieu. Like, for the first time in a while, this team is not hampered by injuries to so many star players at the onset of the season on the offensive side of the ball that we've seen for the past 4 years. This year was supposed to be the year of the eruption. You had Alex Verdugo in. You had Juan Soto. Anthony Volpe, big breakout season in his second year. Anthony Rizzo recovered from the concussion symptoms or brain damage, whatever it was. Gleyber Torres in a contract year. Oswaldo Cabrera looking to redeem himself. Some of these things are working. A lot of them are not. And my concern is we'll talk about Juan Soto's greatness in a minute, but that's about it. Like, are we sure he's going to stay if he's the one who's driving the engine and everybody around him, which is supposed to be a collection of star players, is kind of just floundering for the most part? I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh. What do you think?
No, it is funny that everyone was like, wow, like who would have thought that if we told you this team didn't have Gerrit Cole and they would put up this type of numbers from their rotation, like where would they be without Gerrit Cole? Pretty good spot. But again, yes, that was supposed to, you'd be surprised by that, by someone telling you they were in a good spot because you would have assumed that the offense was a world beater in that case. Not that the rotation was still good and the offense was kind of middling, but somehow still ranked towards the top of many statistics. Again, these wins count, and this was a tough weekend of pitching. Former first overall pick Casey Mize on Saturday, probably the easiest name you had to face. Olsen on Friday night, and Tarek Skubal, who lived up to the billing on Sunday, but Yankees got to him early. Aaron Judge, most importantly, lifted and separated the 97-mile-an-hour fastball on the outside half of the plate, took it out to right field. That's what he does when he's going good, and that's what he did against one of the best fastballs in baseball at this point in time. Skubal, who's the Cy Young favorite. Oswaldo Cabrera got the run in as well by getting that ball down to the right field corner. And Juan Soto, who is Juan Soto, is generational, is inevitable, did the job late in the game after it was tied. But don't fool yourself and say, well, it's a sweep. There are no flaws here. You know, it could have easily been a lost series. Could have dropped 2 out of 3. At one point early in the second game when they took a 5-1 lead and immediately became 5-3 seconds later, and that could have spiraled. You could have lost that game. They didn't. Clay Holmes is fantastic at his job so far this year. Luke Weaver is also incredible. They got the job done. They took that game in the middle innings, brought it to the late innings, finished it off. But not all sweeps are created equal, of course. That said, no sweeps at home since Kansas City last July, which should indicate that, hey, no, not all sweeps are created equal. They certainly didn't dominate this series beginning to end, but it did feel like they had an answer for every Tigers push, which is something I maybe did not expect, especially sitting through the first 8 innings of the Friday night game going, when is this going to get any better? We're going to continue to be harsh on the Yankees. We are not going to say, hey, you know, that was perfect because of the results, so let's not talk about the warts because they got the wins. That said, they banked the wins. You can't argue with it. They currently have a better record than I think any of you listening expected them to have, and I expected them to have. That's not condescension. That's not me saying, oh, I knew they were going to be 23-13, and you didn't. I certainly did not know that. I thought we'd be tough April schedule. I thought we'd be battling out to be at 500, you know, trying to hold the fort until the summer when, like you said, you're always waiting to welcome guys back because there are always injuries. And apparently this is the only year when the offense is mostly intact, even though Aaron Judge probably playing through something. But you want to be, you know, the pessimistic angle. I've got pessimism for you. Anthony Volpe's down to like 250 now. He's got an OPS barely over 700. That's not what I was told. I was told he solved that issue. He's had less power than last year. Like, the OPS is higher because the average is higher and the OBP is higher, but there's the power's down. So what did we sacrifice power, but we sacrifice it for what? So we could hit 250 and hit 110 over the last 25 at-bats in a week's worth of games. You got one hit this weekend. And then the Aaron Judge thing, it's funny because the optimistic angle on Aaron Judge's resurgence this weekend is obvious. Been waiting for it forever. And he took two screwball fastballs into the right center gap. One left the yard, one was a double. He's 11 for his last 31, I believe, with three homers across nine games. Here's the problem. That meant he dominated the Tigers and dominated the series right before the Orioles in Milwaukee. Most important series of the three is that series in Baltimore. It dragged all his numbers down. He was great in Milwaukee, great at home against the Tigers. Terrible in the one potentially determinative series in the AL East race. So I might be the only one to throw cold water on the Judge resurgence and say he's been fantastic in six of the last 10 games. The four that really mattered were the ones where he was quite bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's part of the concern too. It's a lot of rising to the occasion, and I understand it's April, May. There's not much of that, but you go back to the postseason, kind of stumbling from Aaron Judge and from the rest of this roster. You immediately highlight the ALCS against the Astros in 2022. You look at the ALDS against the Rays in 2020. There's a lot of troubling performances here dating back to 2019. And the Yankees have done a whole lot of nothing since then. So once again, like, you faced a couple of good pitchers in this stretch. The Tigers, you know, the Tigers are kind of not slouchers this year. And I think the Yankees pitching does deserve credit. But then again, this is the 24th ranked offense in the league in Detroit. They have talent. They don't have enough talent. So while you might be looking at this Tigers team as a different one than in years past, you'd be right. But there's still ways for them to go. They are still very much out of the Yankees league. In my opinion, this should have been a layup series for the Yankees to win. They took care of business. They sure did. I'm not going to deny that, but the manner in which they did was a little bit, you know, edgier seat, a little bit too stressful, for our liking. You know, you have the first game, which we just talked about. You have yesterday where the bullpen blows a lead. You have Saturday, which the Yankees thankfully had gotten out to a lead and never surrendered it. But, you know, there were some close calls in that one too. It wasn't the easiest of showings. Clark Schmidt, once again, faltering the third time through the lineup, as you know, Marcus Stroman's been having some trouble with too. So, I don't know. I like, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's hitting with runners in scoring position. That's nice. Anthony Rizzo's hot streak again died against the Orioles, but has sustained against all these other inferior teams. I am not going to criticize it, but you do have to wonder, like, is the team ready to face better pitching? Is the team ready to face on paper a more intimidating opponent, and ready for the challenge? The Orioles are somehow the gold standard after 1 year of success. And I am not criticizing them because I know that they're a really talented team, but the Yankees should be better than the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles have little to no experience. They have largely inferior pitching. I know all of their players, you know, roster top to bottom is pretty good, but like, they made no big expenditures. Call the Corbin Burns trade a big one if you want. I would call that a blockbuster deal, but they didn't surrender a lot to get him. They didn't pay anybody in the offseason except Craig Kimbrell. And they're running on service time for a majority of their players and a majority of their pitchers. So you look at the Yankees roster, and yeah, the Yankees have a healthy mix. They're getting there with younger players and veterans, but the Yankees have a $300 million payroll. The Yankees, in theory, have
shelled out enough money to be able to handle an upstart Orioles team, and they weren't able to do it. If they can handle the Brewers, that's great. If they can handle the Tigers, that's great. Again, not complaining about a sweep, but the larger problems still remain afoot. The offense, you know, how many runs in this series? 12 across three games. That's an average of 4 per game. That is pretty much what's league average, like 3.5, some shit like that.
Yeah. I miss baseball when it was fun and good.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is something to be said about, what is it this year? It is MLB team runs per game. Hang on. The Dodgers lead the way at 5.4. Where the fuck are the Yankees on this list? The Yankees are 13th at 4.61. It looks like the league average is right there, 4.5.
Yeah, right below.
So, the Yankees were below the league average in runs against the Detroit Tigers this weekend. You know, just things to look at, because we know that this team is talented. We know this team is good, but forever with a roster like this, the lens will be, what can you do against better opponents on your schedule? What can you do against teams in high leverage situations? And for the most part, I think the Yankees have left a lot to be desired on both of those fronts. In the early going, again, 23-13, 10 games above 500, banking wins when the going has gotten tough, but, there needs to be more consistency. That's just what it comes down to. And if you're not even being consistent against an inferior opponent in the Tigers, then it leaves more worry. Sadly, I don't want to think about this team like this. I don't. Because the wins were nice. It was nice. It was nice to see the game called yesterday. You know how many times fucking MLB loves to keep that shit, you know, yeah. Oh yeah, no, we'll resume this at 9 p.m. Don't worry. When everybody's been sitting around, they're completely cold. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And then the Yankees blow it in the ninth because of the long layoff. But MLB called the game. Juan Soto got the huge hit in the seventh inning, bases clearing double. But you kind of, it was anticlimactic with the way that it ended. Every day was a little bit, you know, it was kind of gloomy every day, so it wasn't exactly inspiring. And then you have, you know, just the offense came through when it needed to, so props there. We got to give the credit, but should it have had to have done that on three separate days? I don't know. Or on two, I'll give them, you know, that they wired to wired game two.
Yeah, really punch. Nice.
But again, should have done that. Should have wired one of the games at least.
Yeah, Nestor doesn't get the win yesterday either. He's brilliant in the rain for 6+ innings, 2 singles, gets the extra third of an inning, and in comes the bullpen that can't get K's. And Ian Hamilton is regressing. But I honestly wouldn't even take a shot at him and say like he's regressing. I would say you watch him. He's hurt.
For some reason, he had a nice outing on Friday.
We're running an injured guy out there, and he's unable to miss bats. It is what it is. He was solid on Friday. Yes, we used him twice in this series, including in the pouring rain. But that is why the series was ultimately kind of satisfying, because you could have seen a loss on Sunday. You should have seen a loss on Friday. You end up taking all three wins. If this is the same roster that shows up in the playoffs, then I know what to expect, and I know my expectations aren't high. But their needs are obvious. Swing and miss in the bullpen. And that does not mean wait for Tommy Canley and Nick Birdie to get healthy, because I don't think those guys are going to be around all year, end of year, et cetera. You're going to need to add more swing and miss in the bullpen, regardless of the health of those guys, because we can't keep running Caleb Ferguson out in high leverage situations. You just can't do it. And there are a lot of guys who it's like, man, I do not want to turn to that guy, but I guess I have to. Bullpen ERA doesn't tell the whole story, although the bullpen ERA has been fantastic. But it does not tell the whole story. Clay Holmes is 0.00 ERA, drag that bullpen ERA down significantly, but you can't use Clay Holmes all that often. So they need to find more there. You know they need to find more there. You know they're going to need to find another starting pitcher. You know, most importantly, they're going to need to strengthen the bench again, or hope we have a couple more months to see what we have in Volpe. It's got to look more like the first couple weeks of April than the last couple. Otherwise, might need to upgrade that spot. But they do go ahead and win the first, second, and third game. That is a sweep. That's how sweeps are made. They have not done a whole lot of that recently. Again, last July, almost 10 months ago, their last sweep at home, and that was a terrible Kansas City Royals team. So The moment I was happiest, I mean, it's probably the Stanton double to tie game one in the ninth, just because the Judge exit velocity grounder, that's great. The Alex Verdugo bunt, again, that's more uncle porn. We've talked about that. But when Stanton actually rips that double, you're like, okay, that's the first time the rally feels real. Because how many rallies have we seen killed by ground ball chopper double plays or a Stanton strikeout? Then up comes Rizzo, and there's the double play. First and second, nobody out, down one. I'm not like, all right, we got a shot. As soon as Stanton laces the double, ties, gets the tie out of the way, gives him three outs theoretically to work with to get the winning run across the plate. That's the first time you even let yourself believe a little bit. So shout out to Giancarlo Stanton's laser double going the other way. Had a couple of big hits in this series, and I'll give him credit there. And then it has to be said from Joel Sherman. Joel Sherman's stat, Juan Soto has obviously been a wrist monster this year. Sorry to Sal Licata. He's not going to come through every at-bat, but he is going to come through in most of the at-bats he faces in pressure situations like that. And as Joel Sherman pointed out, not only does Juan Soto dominate with runners in scoring position, lefty on lefty. When they bring in a lefty or already have a lefty facing him with runners in scoring position, yesterday they bring in Andrew Chafin with the bases loaded and one out to try to go ahead and get him. Left on left for Juan Soto with Risp, 5 for 7, 2 walks, a sack fly, and 10 RBI. So that means 10 plate appearances. He has only made 3 outs, and one of those did not count as an over because it got a run home, sacrifice fly to the plate. Only 2 unproductive outs in 10 plate appearances, and none of them were K's. So shout out to Juan Soto, who, even when you try to neutralize him with a lefty reliever, in a high-pressure situation, you can't do it. So that plus, and I'll also add, moment I was happiest, like you said, when they actually decided to call the game yesterday. So like, oh my, we don't have to wait 3 more hours for this shit. Like, the same level of rain that they played through for an hour and a half is now enough to cancel the game in the bottom of the eighth inning. Like, hey, more Godspeed, more power to you. I don't know where that came from, but good.
Yeah, I would like to say the Stanton moment, but I turned that game off after the eighth inning because I said, why am I doing this? So maybe I am the good luck charm. I watched every inning for the you know, the one Orioles game I didn't watch? The one where we were not watching it.
That's true.
On Wednesday.
You were there.
So I watched every inning of the slog against the Orioles. I watched Friday against the Brewers, and then I tuned in for the other weekend game. So I guess I shouldn't say that that's a full trend, but this week it might be. My happiest moment was Judge homering off Scooble in the first inning yesterday. The offense, once again, went silent from innings 4 through 9 the day before, which is what they do. They will score anywhere in between 2 and 5 runs, and then they will cease to exist for the remainder of the game. That's exactly what they did on Saturday. And then Judge homers against one of the AL Cy Young favorites, takes him oppo, get some momentum going with the offense. It ends up, you know, keeping the Yankees in a really good spot against one of the best pitchers in the league. Nestor Cortez does his job, but I think if they don't have that, if they don't have that 2-run cushion going into the seventh or whatever it was, and it's only 1 run, we're looking at a different outcome because I think the team is playing differently down 2-1 than they are tied 2-2. And plus just Judge rebound. That was his first at bat after Saturday's ejection. So good to see him rebound, in that manner. He had multiple hits on Saturday as well. Should have gotten on base for the third time on that 3-2 count when he was rung up on a ball. Don't know how many more times we have to discuss this. Oh, funny enough, of all the calls to get wrong and then to get ejected for, Judge has never been ejected in his career. We'll talk about this a little bit more.
Might not happen again.
Yeah, might not happen again.
Let's talk about it now. We'll talk about it now.
Just an outside pitch. Judge has been victimized by the low pitch for 7 years now. And then the one he's going to get ejected on is a shitty outside call on a shitty call on an outside pitch. Like, that's bewildering to me. And then, you know, I know probably what he said warranted getting ejected, but getting ejected while he's walking back to the dugout, I know maybe he probably said some extra words while he was walking back, but just chicken shit stuff.
I don't even know if he did desert. You see what he said, and the reason that you know what he said is we can all say, hey, maybe there were some extra words in there, and maybe there were. But he claims he said, you've been bullshitting all day. And you can see the ump after he ejects him. You could read his lips saying, I have not been bullshitting all day. So we know that he did say that, because obviously the crybaby umpire is like, I take offense to the I didn't do that thing that you said I did. So he definitely said it. He corroborated Judge's account. That's just an unbelievable thing to eject Judge for while Judge is walking away. Again, in a game the Yankees lead, in a game where the Yankees obviously would like him to finish it out. Ultimately, they do. There's no real drama down the stretch there, and we appreciate you giving him a couple innings off his feet. But, yeah, for Judge's first career ejection, to not be on a low pitch, not be on a pitch below the knees, not even really be on something egregious. It could have nicked the corner. It might be a little outside. It's a 3-2 pitch that a
terribly framed pitch. You can't call that a strike.
I think it's a ball. We obviously think it's a ball here in New York, but you know, the K zone says it's on the edge. It's a strike. Yeah. He didn't deserve to get it, but it's not the worst strike call ever made against Aaron Judge. And it's not in the zone where typically bad strike calls are made against Aaron Judge. Judge makes one quip, turns his back, leaves, and gets tossed. Like, for the first time, and I would say probably the last time, until he's a grizzled 39-year-old with a mustache at the end of the Yankees bench, borderline player coach, trying to get through one more day. Maybe he's got another ejection in him at the end of his career when he's basically done with his playing days. But I don't think you're going to see Judge in his prime get ejected at Yankee Stadium ever again. And while his back is turned, is just the softest umpire garbage ever, and actually the second softest, I would say it's the softest, but we're about a week removed from Aaron Boone getting ejected for something a fan said, so it doesn't get softer than that. This is the number two in the soft ejection power rankings.
That umpire's never gonna he's never gonna have a pleasant experience coming back. People are gonna remember his name. Is how it goes. And he will never have a pleasant experience coming back to the Bronx, so hope he's happy.
Yeah, he's not, though. Moment you almost pissed your pants. It's good to bring this back because you can't really be angry at this point. I'm not angry. I mean, we already also went through like 18 minutes of like being slightly aggrieved about a series that we ultimately did sweep. So, the moment I almost pissed my pants, obviously, how often does this happen, too, of course, in the finale of the series? You wake up that day and you're like, we already took two, got Scooble Nestor today. Cy Young candidate against Nestor trying to reestablish his rhythm and get back into being a top tier pitcher. But in the morning, I do not anticipate winning that game.
No.
Like, all right, let's put up a representative fight. You already took the series. Hey, you know, maybe it's, you know, we're down 2-0 and then we have to hand it over to the bullpen and Caleb Ferguson gives up some runs and we lose 5-1. I didn't expect to win this game. So of course they take an early lead. They hold that lead through 6 innings, and then you're getting ideas. And now you're angry about a lead being blown that you never would have been angry about if you just hadn't taken it in the first place. Luckily, they come out strong in the bottom of the frame, win the game in the bottom of the 7th, and it ultimately gets rained out. But when you are watching them blow that lead and the bases are loaded and they are one Javi Baez gapper double away from the Tigers just running away with it, definitely the moment I almost pissed my pants was just looking at the rain the whole time going, why are they playing a baseball game now? Why is this game still being played? And then it's a completely arbitrary decision to ultimately pull the plug on it. It was pouring in the 6th. It was pouring in the 7th. It was pouring in the top. And then the bottom of the 8th, once the Yankees get through the top of the 8th, they're finally like, all right, the Tigers' chances of coming back are now as low as they've been all game. Now we can wrap it. I'd be annoyed if I was a Tigers fan.
Of course.
But I'm also annoyed as a Yankees fan, just looking at it going, it was doing this. It was bad weather all day, and it was probably raining at the same level from the 5th inning on. So why did we make a decision to let them play through a bunch of storms, almost gave the game away, both teams rally, and then we decide, okay, that's that. Now I've seen enough.
Yeah, I mean, Volpe makes that error too. It's like, when is it going to? I understand it's raining out, but that's a weak ground ball. At first I thought he thought there was only one out when you saw it in like real time. It's like, oh, he was just taking the extra step to second, but then you saw the replay and he fucking bobbled it, of course. The middle infield is just, it's unreliable. It's going to cost us close games later in the year if it's not cleaned up. But mine was Saturday when Caleb Ferguson came in. He gets the first guy to strike out and then he walks Kerry Carpenter. Matt Vierling infield single, and you're just like, great, here we go. Here comes the bullshit. But then Luke Weaver comes in, saves the day. Tough stuff for Caleb Ferguson, man. I know we've talked so much about this, and I was like, you know, he can't be used in extra inning games. He can't be used in the ninth. He can't be used when it's tied. Just bring him in a cushy situation. And this theoretically was the cushy situation, and he couldn't get it done. And it was just, again, unnecessary. The Yankees got out to a 5-1 lead in this game. In the fourth inning, you were feeling really good. I'm sorry, in the third inning, you were feeling really good about it. And just far too many times it felt like it was in peril after that. But yeah, yesterday was frustrating because they had the opportunities to take a larger lead. They didn't. They kept getting fanned by Skubal, couldn't figure him out. And that's another thing that worries me. It's like when a pitcher has their fucking number, the pitcher has their number, and there is no adapting. There is no figuring it out on the fly after that. It's just 12 strikeouts, boom, 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 boom. Enjoy it. You might get a lucky home run in between, which is what happened. Caleb, we got to figure out this bullpen, man. It's got to get figured out.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have no idea. You look at Caleb Ferguson's numbers. I have no idea how this is real life. 20, like he's down his last seven games. He's got a 1.69 ERA, 4 hits and 5 1/3 innings, only 2 walks, 9 Ks, and a 1.13 WHIP. That does not align with reality. That does not align with what I watch. No point have I been comfortable with Caleb Ferguson. And they're when the guys come back, when Canely theoretically comes back, when Nick Birdie comes back, the guys who are going to go down are the guys with options, but in reality, like, how much more Caleb Ferguson do we need to see at this point? Like, I've preferred basically every other button we've pressed so far this year. And who even is, like, I guess we're gonna demote Ron Marinaccio when these guys come back, even though he's been one of the preferred. I mean, obviously, we all know who the first DFA is. It's our boy Michael Tonkin, who's not long for this season. Somehow has participated in 9 games this year across multiple teams and already has 3 losses. That's tough to do. But after that, they're going to start entertaining the guys with options like Marinaccio, who I'd rather see in a game than Caleb Ferguson, who I'd probably rather see in a game for all his boisterousness. Victor Gonzalez has been a fun watch, but not exactly someone you can count on to miss bats and is inducing a lot of hard contact. Maybe when these guys come back, that's when they say, okay, Ian Hamilton, you still having trouble working that shoulder out. We see you on the mound doing this every time you pitch. Are you still struggling to bounce back? Why don't you take some time on the IL? We'll bring Nick Birdie back. I'm sure Nick Birdie will get hurt again. Then we'll bring you back just so we can keep Marinaccio in the mix. Because he's actually been pretty great so far. Not great enough that I'm like, I've seen enough. He's back in the 8th inning role, back in the circle of trust. But I'd certainly rather see Marinaccio stick around.
Yeah, Marinaccio, I think, has had an improved season year over year. His stuff looks better. His confidence seems to be in a good spot because the spiraling that we saw last year, I mean, at AAA, mm-hmm. That was some stuff that you thought maybe he wouldn't be able to come back from. Because you get demoted from the big league roster. They're like, you know what, figure it out in AAA. And then you put up I don't even remember. Those numbers were scary.
Let me pull up the scary numbers just so we can do them again. Like, I don't want to, but man, oh man. Yeah. It's like 12 whip or whatever.
Yeah, it was really insane. But yeah, they got to fit. And look, like, I'm also for the bullpen, it's patchwork, right? They're put together with gum and, you know, loose bandages. We're sitting here, we're saying reinforcements are on the way, right? We're calling Tommy Canley a reinforcement. We're calling Nick Birdie a reinforcement, but are they reinforcements? Like, Nick Birdie's a giant question mark. I understand he's a good bullpen luxury to have, but mm-hmm. kind of seems like we might be factoring him in as a serious, you know, role in the pen. Tommy Canley, love him. Can't project him. Can't project his usage. Can't project his reliability. Can't project his health. Can't do it. It's much like DJ LeMahieu. Like, DJ LeMahieu for me is out of sight, out of mind. I can't worry about what's happening with him. I wish him the best, but like, I can't think about him in this lineup at all. For, you know, until it's been 4 years. Tommy Canley, same thing. Like, Tommy Canley hasn't been healthy in years. Nick Birdie hasn't been healthy in years. So there's a lot of work to be done here. It's going to be that's the other side of the coin here. Why the offense badly needs to find a semblance of consistency, because the front office's work is going to be cut out for them at the trade deadline, no matter what, right? If they need to focus on upgrading the offense, it's going to be a major goddamn problem, because right now they need to improve the pitching because of the injuries in the rotation and because of the unreliability and, you know, bad peripheral metrics from the bullpen. So that's why the offense is a concern right now, because it's like, okay, like, you look at the Luis Arraez trade and you're like, where were the Yankees? Just wondering. You know, I don't think they need to make that trade, but you saw what Gleyber's done for the first month of the year. You know how kind of he is as a player. You've seen him for 7 years now. You bet on him to have a big contract year. I'm not saying he can't rebound, but the early returns are suggesting that it's more of the same that you've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, where he's failed to rise to the occasion since 2020. So, well, it could have been an early season trade for the Yankees. You put Luis Arraez there, you figure out a suitor for Torres, you call it a day, you know, maybe pay the difference in salary, eat the rest of Torres's money, take on Arraez, give up a couple prospects, who knows? But if the big moves for the trade deadline are coming in 2 months, the offense better shape up, because it's going to have to be pitching. The offseason pitching acquisitions for the bullpen aren't really working out. The guys year over year the Yankees thought would be maybe taking a step or getting a bigger role defined for them, not really happening. So that's what it's all about, perspective with these, right? So it's like, if Nestor Cortez, I mean, what are we doing? What's our reaction if we had the Judge home run yesterday, Nestor Cortez has the gem that he threw, and the Yankees still find a way to lose that game 2-1? We're not talking about Nestor Cortez's really good start. In fact, we're talking about how he got labored probably in the sixth inning against a relatively weak Tigers lineup, put runners on, and then put the bullpen in a bad position. You know, and then some of these other games you're sitting here and you're like, oh man, the Yankees offense came through, like they scored enough runs. And in reality, it was like the pitching really just did its job and the offense did barely enough. So it's a matter of looking at, like, you can be happy about the series. It was a series sweep. They got the hits when they needed to. They beat an inferior team. It's really all what you could have asked for. But there, again, there's just a lot of stuff that's kind of up in the air right now. And it all matters which lens. It all depends on which lens you're looking through at it. And for me, that's the biggest thing for the offense to improve, is so the front office can have its work cut out for them, because they can't be running around with a chicken without their head, because we've seen what these deadlines look like when the Yankees need everything, right? Like 2021, it was like, yeah, that was a cool deadline, but what were they doing? They didn't really do anything to make the team better. They like got barely better and then they flamed out.
And they left it. Yeah. 22 is the ultimate.
22. They tried to get fancy because like they still needed stuff. They needed kind of things everywhere. The offense was playing at a historic pace, but players started to get injured. The pitching staff started to break down a little bit. It was a mishmash. They kind of needed everything. And then last year, they literally needed everything. They needed everything last year. And Brian Cashman's brain literally short-circuited. And he said, I'm not remaking this roster. I'm not doing it. So here's Keenan Middleton. Figure out the rest. And that's what we're doing. So that's really where what this series has done is made me realize like that the Yankees offense needs to figure it out. So we don't have to be having these conversations in a month or two.
We really did trade for Keenan Middleton last year. Speaking of, how do you think Keenan Middleton is doing in St. Louis this year?
Very good. I checked the stats the other day.
He has not appeared.
Keenan Middleton?
Yeah, Keenan Middleton has no games. He threw three spring training appearances, allowed two hits, and struck out two. Was great in spring training. Yet to appear in a major league game. It's only 15.
Oh my God. Yeah, you're right. I looked at the wrong stats. I looked at his stats at the Yankees from last year. I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
No, he was great in New York. Yeah, no. Keenan Middleton, no baseball for Keenan Middleton.
Yeah, why is that? Is he injured?
Yes, he is. Hopefully it's an injury for his sake. I don't want to see a healthy man being held out of the juggernaut St. Louis Cardinals bullpen.
Well, because they paid a lot of money for him. They paid like $11 million.
It was the same thing when you were like, well, they got to sign Frankie Montas. Like, they need additional juice in the rotation. They got to get him on like a 1 year, $5 million deal. And he signs a 1 year, $16 million deal. And you're like, best of fucking luck. Can't sign that guy. And he is now on the IL as well. 19 and a third innings, 1.448 whip in Cincinnati. Not interested. No, thank you. Might be revisiting some of those cocky Frankie Montas quotes at the end of the season from the early spring training when he was declared their number one starter. Also, how high was Ron Marinaccio's ERA last year in AAA?
AAA?
I got it in front of me. I said 12 whip. Oh. Obviously, that's not true. No,
I was going to say 13 ERA.
A little lower than that, but it's an 8.80 mark in 15 and a third innings. 18 walks in those 15 and a third innings. Completely unacceptable. And I think a lot of people remember his 2023 Yankees season as worse than it actually was. He allowed 35 hits in 47 and a third, 3.99 ERA, 56 strikeouts. That's fine for the last man in the bullpen, but 27 walks is abysmal in those 47 and a third innings. And again, the Yankees had higher hopes for Ron Marinaccio than the last man in the bullpen. So credit to him. He's working his way back into the center of their plans.
Love Ron.
For now, it would seem. But since he has options, he still might be down in a couple of weeks, which is patently a little bit absurd, just kind of ridiculous. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. They already were sending him down for the options in 2022, and he was going good. So you'd imagine they would also use those options now when he's still going pretty well, but not quite so well. You opened the Luis Arraez can of worms too. Do you want a war on your hands?
No. I mean, sure, but no.
Well, it's just everyone's going to do the thing of like he's basically maxed out at a 4 WAR player, and he's not valuable unless he's hitting 325. And that's true, but also he is hitting 325.
Yeah,
like a lot. He's hitting 311 this year. He hit 299 in Miami this year, but now he's up to 311. He hit 354 last year for Miami. He hit 316 in 2022 for Minnesota. He is the back-to-back batting champion in both leagues. Average is not the most important thing, but when your average is that high and you do provide a different look, like the Yankees adding a guy like Luis Arraez to put a different look in that lineup and somebody who can move runners over and again, doing all the things that older baseball fans value maybe a little too highly, but younger baseball fans probably undervalue a little bit. Yeah. I would obviously put Luis Arraez on this roster and be pretty happy with that. And you wouldn't even really need to sign him long-term in order to reap the rewards. He's a free agent after 2025. So if he's not going to be a 4 WAR player forever or whatever, okay, he could do that somewhere else. He could regress on someone else's dime. I'll take him for this year and next year.
Yeah. Sure, this year in theory it's not looking great in terms of the advanced metrics, but again, this team has needed this kind of profile of a player. Don't need to make the whole roster out of it, but Luis Arraez doesn't strike out. This roster strikes out a fuck ton. You need to balance that. They balance it with Alex Verdugo. One player is not enough. I understand Juan Soto does he strike out a ton actually? I don't even know.
Not much.
I mean, it's he'll strike. I mean, he's certainly not striking out only 40 times a year, which is what Luis Arraez does.
Yes, that is not happening.
Yeah. So in this situation, you would, in theory, add a lefty bat. You would add somebody who's a utility infielder to save your bacon with all these other potential injuries, or maybe not wanting to play John Birdie much more. And then you would ensure yourself beyond 2024 with a skilled player who has a different batted ball profile than a lot of how the roster was constructed, and isn't a lot of money. Final year of arbitration for him is probably not going to be a whole lot. If they, what they paid for Torres, Glaber was $12 million final year of arb.
Oh man, it was so unpleasant, and I'm still surprised that they settled. Yeah,
you thought it was going to be a problem. We all thought it was going to be a problem, but you look at Arraez, who's making
10 and a half
this year. He's 10?
10.6, and the Marlins paid that down. They were so happy to get rid of him and take.
I would have paid that up.
Prospects. Yeah.
I would have given them Torres, paid the difference in salary, and then given them two top prospects. I think that's a fair trade. Again, I don't know what prospects they would have been, but just wondering what the conversation was here, if the Yankees were involved, because there were rumors that they were after him. What was it, last year? 2 years ago? Weren't they after him both years when he was on the Twins and the Marlins?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that he was available when he was on the Twins, and I definitely couldn't believe that he was available on the Marlins. And shout out to Peter Bendix, the new Marlins president of baseball ops, for delivering just a pile driver quote to a bunch of people in your locker room who are still trying to live their lives. They were like, yeah, we're not making the playoffs this year. We're not very good. Like, well, that sucks to hear. You've some, maybe you got a couple of things to learn about how to manage personalities, but shout out to you for just treating these humans like cattle and being like, yeah, we can move on. We're not good. We're not going to win games. I mean, obviously you aren't very good, but open season on the Marlins, I would have done the deal that you're describing. I would have traded Gleyber Torres, added two top prospects, and said, don't worry about the salary. We'll help you guys out here. We can absorb that prorated $10.6 million. Or they would have to pay up to get the Glaber's number or what have you.
Yeah, pay up the extra $2-3 million.
Yeah.
Sure.
We're in prime Glaber nonsense territory, though, right now. Because a couple of days ago, Torres basically said during the Orioles series, the contract stuff's not affecting him at all. Then in the final game of that set, almost a troll, like hilariously so, makes just an unbelievable barehanded attempt at a double play turn, drops the ball, doesn't get a single out, bunch of runs score in that inning. One of them is unearned because of that play. Bottom of that inning, homers, first homer of the year. Congrats to Gleyber Torres. But that's why it feels like a troll. You wouldn't do that unless you had the power to homer. It felt like he had the power to homer whenever he wanted to, and he chose the funniest possible moment. After the game, Aaron Boone, a quote that you never hear.
Never.
Aaron Boone. Never. Boone on Glaber's error. Player manager Aaron Boone on Gleyber Torres' error. Brendan Cuddy transcribing. Quote, he's got to secure the ball. It's the big leagues. You've got to make the play, and he didn't make the play. Now, tone, I guess, is important there. It's the big leagues. You got to make the play, and he didn't make the play. Is not really taking. He's not really going out on a limb. It's true. It's the big leagues. You got to make these plays. He did not. So you could read it as just him describing in a little blunter than expected, but also pretty boilerplate terms what the situation that we watched. He didn't say that's embarrassing. That's a ridiculous error. We can't have that. He said the big league level. You got to make the play. He didn't. That's manager speak. I get it, but saying that's the big leagues as a signifier indicates that the play he watched was not major league quality. And to me, that's one of the most stunning indictments of a player's mistake that I've ever heard Aaron Boone make. And it also makes you think, okay, that's a physical mistake theoretically, but the way Boone treated it, he's treating it like a mental mistake because he's saying it's the big leagues. Come on, we're at the major league level. You have to make that play.
If you're going to barehand it, you must make the play.
Yeah, he's not just saying, okay, that's a physical error. We can live with those. He's saying, I saw what you did. And in the major leagues, that play has to be made. Whether you want to barehand it or not, finish it. And Gleyber Torres didn't. I have not heard him speak like that other than last year when he said Jonathan Loaisiga is never available.
Yeah.
And that obviously didn't. That was mean, and it didn't result in a non-tender like we thought it might, but this was pretty harsh from Boone, all things considered. And did Glaber respond with an epic weekend? No, not really. Well,
3-for-13, 3 strikeouts, a run scored, 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. I know he had a couple moments where he it was some nice pieces of two strike hitting, but again, how much are we lowering the bar?
567 OPS. That's a conversation we're having. 4-game hitting streak with one hit in every game. That's, we're saying that that's good.
Yeah. And I don't think, wait, he had, yeah, the hit, no, he had the homer in the Orioles game and then just singles over the, yeah, no extra base hits in the series against the Tigers.
No.
Look, baseball's hard. I'm not like, that's what we're looking at with the declining MLB average over year, the aggregate average across the league, like pitching's getting harder and harder to hit. But when you construct a lineup like the Yankees do, Torres has a lot of, you know, he's a lineup lengthener. He has not been pressured to be one of the main producers on the New York Yankees, despite the fact that other teams, based on his 2018 and 2019 performances, might have done that to him. The Yankees have never put pressure on Gleyber Torres to succeed at the rate that he did his first 2 years in the league. In fact, the pressure has mostly been taken off of him, with the exception of them asking him to move to his natural position of shortstop in 2020, which I guess he just didn't want to do because he got comfortable at second base when he was in the bigs. So that's why it's like, how much more are we going to lower the bar? How much more are we going to, oh, you know, let's give everybody a pat on the back. They got a couple of hits this weekend and they managed to battle with two strikes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you have to do that when you're playing. You can't just like give up. You can't give up when you have two strikes. Like, yeah, the positive signs are there, but like, that's, we're giving pats on the back to like new major leaguers for that, for guys who have limited major league baseball experience, not someone who's been here for 7 years, who's still making mental. He ran. I understand what he was trying to do on that play in the Tigers game. It was that thing where you run through the base, you try to beat the throw to second, but he runs into the infielder. Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? At that point, you see the guy is completely straddling the bag, just slide. He's definitely not in the position for you to try to make that move. And honestly, like, I don't know if he was trying to do that. People are saying that he was trying to do that, which we've caught it a couple times. The Cardinals did it successfully. What was it, last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nolan Gorman.
Yeah, Nolan Gorman did it last year. It's, they're trying to turn two. The runner beats the throw to second instead of sliding. So they're in stride. They touch the bag. They keep running. And then the runners are all alive. So then you allow, you know, the guy on third to get home without the double play ending the inning or whatever it is. Either way, like, Torres showed no grace in his attempt to do that. And we've seen countless base running gaffes on his end as recently as what, the Orioles? What was the series where he got picked off? Was it the Orioles series?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, he got picked off in the Orioles series, but he started taking off before the pitcher even wound up. And he got thrown out. So it's like, am I going to believe that he was that he actually had intelligent, witty intentions to break up this double play? Like, I don't think that's where I'm leaning. I hope that's what it is. But again, how low are we setting the bar for players who should be just serviceable major leaguers without us having to talk about their performance every week? I don't like it. It doesn't make me happy.
No, none of this makes us happy. Even a sweep. Listen to this episode. You'll know. it kind of sucks. I think we all know Houston's coming in. We all know that they're better than their record. Even if they're not, even if they literally aren't, even if they are as bad as their record is, they're still going to play as hard. Jose Altuve is still going to hear the fuck Altuve chants, which don't do them. Please don't do them. I bet, I literally beg of you, do not do them. People are going to get into the ballpark 3 hours early. They're like clearing their practicing, being like, how do you pronounce fuck? Because I think I want to say it's Altuve to start the game. Like, how do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce Altuve for that matter? Don't do it. All it does is wake him up. All it does is get the series off on the wrong foot. All it does is set the wrong precedent. And yeah, they're facing Justin Verlander in the opener. And yeah, the Astros were swept by the Yankees in 4 games about a month ago. They want to sweep. They want to come into Yankee Stadium and make a statement, and they need to because their season is spiraling out of control. So how about we keep things calm, don't agitate a team that loves to get agitated, and just take care of your business? Because coming up, you need to bank these Tigers wins. Because the Astros, when people are going to, if you lose to the Astros with their record, even with their talent, people are going to laugh at you. So get ready. Get as many wins as you can under your belt in this series. You made a statement last month. You got to make another one. I don't make the rules. You have to win some games.
We don't make the rules. But yeah, you have a wounded Astros team right now coming in. The better team would take advantage of that and not allow them to use that as fuel to take you down. But anyway, we'll talk about the Astros when we have to talk about the Astros. Where are we even at? Who do we have to rip? Who's next? No one?
No, I don't have anyone else to rip.
I guess no one. I guess we're good. Look, it's hard to hit baseballs. It's hard to win games. But this Yankees team should just be a little bit better than it is. And it should find a semblance of consistency. The team is always talking about hoping that a certain moment sparks them, motivates them, and it seems like we're still struggling to find that. Again, 12 runs against the Tigers doesn't seem like enough. What's the Tigers team ERA, actually? Let's maybe debunk me. MLB stats. What's Google going to tell me?
I bet it's pretty good.
I bet it's pretty good, too. But is it good enough?
What's your threshold?
My threshold is top 12.
I bet it is.
They are fourth. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be.
I stand corrected. This is just starters. So if we do total. Oh, no, this is total. Okay. They have a 3.24 ERA, a 1.12 whip, 218 batting average against, 303 strikeouts, which is a considerable number. That is tied for 11th in the league. So the Tigers pitching is good. The Yankees pitching is actually in third with a 2.99 ERA. So they are just ahead of Detroit in that department. I'll give the Yankees credit then. I rescind, but still, I felt like there were some moments that it was like, come on, we got it. Let's do it. They didn't do it. Props to Soto for the big hit. Props to Judge for kind of igniting the team on those two separate occasions. Props to Rizzo putting one over the fence. Stanton kind of solid too. What a weird stat line from this guy. Let's just talk about this for a second because it's so bizarre what Giancarlo Stanton does. He has that strikeout in Baltimore where it's like, what, dude? 0-2 pitch swings at a pitch that was literally never going to be a strike. The second it left the pitcher's hand, it left his hand like already diving to the ground, and Stanton just made the decision to already swing at it. He had a couple of other tough at-bats in that series too. Again, another bat where it's like, damn, what are we doing, man? You're performing against all the bad teams, and then you run into the Orioles, and it's like you're nowhere to be found. But three hits in this series, two RBIs, that's great. Seven strikeouts, I would say that's a little bit problematic. But his stats, 226 batting average, 282 on-base percentage. What? And then he's got a 435 slugging, which is pretty good. Pretty good. And his stats with runners in scoring position are actually good. I'm filtering out the splits, but we'll go ahead.
No, I'm just saying now we're at the point again, though, where if Stanton gets hurt, I have to be kind of bummed about that. I have to be like, oh, but we're actually losing production again. Like, because he's sort of been reliable in clutch situations this year, at least in comparison.
333 batting average, 1.123 OPS with runners in scoring position.
Yep.
11 runs scored, 9 hits, 4 of them are doubles, 2 of them are homers. He's got 14 RBIs. That's in 20 games. That's incredible. So Giancarlo Stanton, who's kind of had a penchant for coming up in big moments for the Yankees, regardless of how the rest of his Yankees tenure has been defined based on injuries or lack of availability in big moments, seems to be able to come through. I know the others, like the ground out, that ground out in that series was absolutely, it's just crazy how he's not really serviceable beyond anything else. The ball bounced off the pitcher's glove, slowly rolled to second base. It was raining out, so the ball got slowed even more, and it seemed like an eternity he was still thrown out by a step. And it's just like, what? you have him rounding third base when Luis Rojas is sending him. You're about to have a heart attack. But yeah, funny, weird stats from him, but keep bringing him to the plate with runners in scoring position, because that's a formula that seems to be working, right?
Get on ahead of Stanton and I can get on board. But yeah, yeah, again, at the start of the year, you're like, all right, anything they get from Stanton is a bonus.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden I'm like, they're kind of reliant on Stanton. That's a that's a bummer, especially in clutch, situations. I mean, yeah, again, look, the common refrain, Fernando bringing it by saying this isn't a championship rotation. Maybe if Cole gets back, hey, you don't know. Hey, I agree. It could use some pedigree. It could use some bigger names, but like it's been for the past, I don't know, 6 years, 8 years, 20 years, it's the offense. The offense showed up in the 2009 postseason and carried a three-man pitching staff who held their own, and good for them. But there might be some play. Let's say they get to the playoffs. There might be some games they lose where a pitcher gives up three runs in the first inning. There might be some games they lose where they're holding a 3-2 lead and blow it in the seventh and lose that postseason game. That would be the offense's fault. The pitching woes are magnified because the margin is so thin. But if we're repeatedly entering games that they lose 2-1 or lose late because it was 2-2 for a long time, the pitching did their job there. The offense did not. So I would say, yeah, again, Cole's necessary.
Cole's a beast.
Cole's necessary. Get more. You got to get another starting pitcher at some point. If starting pitching help becomes available, if you can get a Paul Blackburn without overpaying, I would go ahead and do that. But it's always the offense. So the difference is, does Juan Soto make enough of a difference this year to carry the offense in the postseason in moments of slumber, or are we just sitting through another year of, we were hoping for a bounce back from Stan and Rizzo and Glaber and we didn't get it. We're hoping for Aaron Judge to show up, 62 home run Aaron Judge in the playoffs, and we didn't get it. In a dark moment of the Friday game, I basically tweeted that the Knicks right now are a team that you have faith in any playoff series, whether they win it or lose it. You enter any playoff series knowing, all right, the seeding does not matter. I know the Knicks are going to put up a fight, and I trust them. Whether they win or lose, I will have trusted them all the way. This Yankees team right now, it's the opposite. Whatever the seeding, one, you know, top seed in the, win the AL East and they're the number one seed entering the postseason, or the sixth wild card, which they could be aiming for because they couldn't really care less about their seeding. It's the exact opposite. I don't trust them, whether they're holding the top seed or fighting from the bottom. I will ultimately think they are a paper tiger in the playoffs until proven otherwise. And good on you for rallying on Friday, changing the narrative. Good on you for winning the last two and sweeping for the first time since last July. But again, got to show me some offense in October or some tangible progress leading up to it, so that a bad offensive performance would be a departure from reality rather than just a continuation of reality.
Yeah. 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 I love it.
Well, thanks for joining us for the Post Sweep podcast. It ended up mostly being ruminations about potential October failures that won't be happening for another 5 months. That's why you join us on the Yanks Go Yard podcast, I assume, which again, 2 o'clock Eastern every Monday, every Thursday. And the audio is on all podcast platforms in the wake of the podcast. Caesar Sportsbook, the promo is YGY1000. Appreciate everybody joining us. As always, I am Adam Weiner, but you can find me on Twitter at Adam Weiner, Thomas Carinante. Where can the people find you?
Hey, everybody. Find me at Tommy's _ takes. Tell me I'm being too negative. I want to know. I need to know. But I can't. I have not gotten the feeling that everybody was super excited after that sweep. Anyway, you can find us at the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at Yanks Go Yard FS. Head on over to yanksgoyard.com. We got content there for you. You better believe it. Head on over to the YouTube channel, Yanks Go Yard on YouTube. Plenty of videos there. We're having a good time. Appreciate you guys tuning in and reading the content. We got Astros coming up. I'd love to have a nice, great, positive conversation about whipping the Astros ass on Thursday. Wouldn't you? That would be a great time. That would redeem us for the Monday blues that we have today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's take care of business. Everybody have yourselves a good rest of your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We'll be talking to you at 2 p.m. Eastern. Is that a night game Thursday, right?
Probably 5:05.
5, really?
Yeah.
That's bizarre. We'll talk to you Tuesday. We'll talk to you Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern live right here. Hopefully we just better be heading in, at the very least, heading into a rubber match. Because what, we got to face Verlander game one and then Arrigetti in game two.
Mm-hmm.
And then who's the finale?
Ronel
Blanco. Yeah. And it's Rodon. Forgot. Not doing my job.
I think it's Heel, Verlander, Rodon, Arrigetti, and Blanco against
Stroman.
Against Marcus Stroman. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's good to me. I'll take that. Luis Heel versus Verlander. He just beat Corbin Burns. He rose to the occasion. I like that. Bring him in. Let's
go. It's pretty fun. We'll see you on Thursday again. Hope for a rubber match or hope for taking the first two. We'll be right back here live, 2 o'clock Eastern time. Until then, take care, everybody.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.